right. It is World Series time on the Off the Beaten Base Paths podcast, Joshua. Can you smell the World Series?
Ah, in full effect. We're finally here.
World Series is in full glorious bloom. But before we get to that, we have a little bit of not so much housekeeping, but we kind of have to discuss an article that we read a long time ago, a long, long time ago, because it's gained quite a bit of relevance this week, hasn't it, Josh?
Yes, I think this is one of the first documented cases of the opposite of the Sports Illustrated curse occurring, where the declaration of a team making the World Series actually didn't end up with a pool full of disappointment.
That's right. In the summer of 2014, Ben Reitel of Sports Illustrated, brilliant writer, and wrote a very interesting long-form cover story about the Astros and the reshaping of their front office. And Sports Illustrated put George Springer on their cover with the title, Introducing Your 2017 World Series Champions. Again, this was June, July-ish, 2014. And we looked back at it, and we gotta say, Ben did a pretty good job describing the Astros at that time and what team that they were going to become. So the story is focused on the Astros front office, particularly their sabermetric analyst or their chief sabermetric analyst, Sig Mejda. I believe I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, but I have no idea how else to try. A former blackjack dealer turned rocket scientist turned Moneyball baseball analytics enthusiast who went on to help build one of the best lineups in baseball through a pretty aggressive form of long-form sabermetric analysis that would minimize risk in favor of quick development and long-form decision-making. Basically, as the article describes it, the Astros made decisions on mathematic probability, similar to how you would at a card table. Again, great article. I'm not going to get into the entire thing here. We do want to mention they did talk about some very good young Astro players, including Carlos Correa, George Springer, Jose Altuve, and Dallas Keuchel. Although they did also mention Mark Appel, John Singleton, and Brady Aiken as being likely members of the team that would win the World Series, although none of them are on that team. And it was also the pre-Alex Bregman draft. So, got some things right, got some things wrong. But Josh, there were some things they missed entirely, weren't there?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about an article like that is, you know, it's not really hard for somebody to say, hey, a team's been bad, they've had high draft picks, you know, they'll be good in the future. I think The really interesting thing about the article is the fact that, you know, they were able to kind of put a date on it to show how there was a plan that's going, you know, that the front office had and Mejdal had for how this team would be built. That being said, it takes more than just a plan to really be able to kind of see success that you expect to see in the postseason to get to the World Series. And the Astros have definitely been on the favorable side of that, getting contributions up and down their lineup from people who I don't think they either expected to get that much from, or at least not this early in their career. So you're looking at somebody like an Evan Gattis, who posted like a 110 OPS plus this year. Brian McCann, who, you know, ever since he had his eye troubles had kind of fallen off, he posted a 109 this year. Yuli Gurriel has been kind of a revelation. I mean, at age 33, he put a OPS plus of 124 this year. So, you know, beyond the solid core that was really expected to kind of build this Astros team, there's also been other factors that have been super beneficial, and other players who have been super, super positive contributors towards the march that the Astros have made here to the final stage of the playoffs.
Yeah, and we're not here to, I think you're with me on this, dump on Ben Reitel's work and say, hey, this is what he missed predicting this 3 years ago. But I think we both think it's really interesting the way this shook out. Because when you go back and read the article, nobody actually says in the article, like, we're trying to win the World Series in 2017. And there was no, like, judgment on behalf of Sports Illustrated saying, like, they're going to be in position to win in 2017. It was just kind of, that number was picked on the back of the Astros front office saying they had a five-year plan for the development of the team to try to be competitive pretty quickly.
Exactly. One interesting thing I think to note about this article is that, you know, for those who aren't necessarily the most number inclined, you know, this isn't just another story about Moneyball, Moneyball, Moneyball. There were basically two different approaches when you look at the two teams. The A's were a team that didn't really have a lot of funding. They don't have a lot of money to go out and spend with the big boys, so they had to find some type of market inefficiency to where they could stretch as much value out of every dollar that they had. What the Astros basically were doing is different, and it was just focused on the fact of, hey, look, if you're going to lose, there's no reason to fight for wins and kind of mess up your ability to get guaranteed draft picks, or I'm sorry, to get high draft picks to get you the best guarantee of some success in the future. And so the Astros went forward and lost a bunch of games, lost 100 games, I think it was 3 years in a row.
They trusted the process, if you will.
Exactly, right? They basically invented the process. And I mean, they were able to kind of go out and find their own little efficiency. And that was the fact that, or at least little stat fact, I should say. And that's the fact that, I mean, when you're in the draft, basically anything past the third pick is kind of a crapshoot. So they, you know, they had a plan. They were able to execute it. They used their information that they had garnered in a different manner than the A's did. And, you know, they're about to, I mean, whether they win or not, they've already achieved the success that was beyond belief of what the average baseball fan thought in 2012 or 2014. So, you know, props to them.
It is kind of weird, though, right, that they were able to predict this. I know, obviously, like we said, they weren't trying to predict a World Series. They said it almost, not necessarily facetiously, but almost to emphasize a point that this is a team that's trying to be good quickly, but they actually put it on the cover. It is kind of weird, right? You mentioned the Sports Illustrated curse. Could this be an incredibly huge, like, gut punch of a Sports Illustrated curse where they let the Astros get all the way to the World Series only to have them lose in heartbreaking fashion?
Well, if you're an Astros fan, you need a little bit of insurance to feel better. Don't worry, the Sports Illustrated also decided to declare the Dodgers the best team ever this year. So there might be something working against them, although that was actually before their 11-game losing streak. So they might have already used up that bad luck. We'll see.
Anyway, you mentioned the Dodgers, the best team ever. This is an interesting World Series from the perspective that we probably have the two best teams in baseball across the full season in this World Series. And that doesn't happen very often, as was pointed out to us by our friends at 538.
Yeah, they did a pretty good analysis about it. And, you know, one of the big things everyone knows about baseball is that it's a pretty random sport. You know, we play 162 games. Quite frankly, you need thousands of games to really kind of sort out any type of talent because the margins are just so small in it. That's, you know, that's what makes the playoffs so fun, but it also makes it frustrating because you have teams that kind of pop up now and again that make an improbable run that, you know, hey, their fan base is excited. Everyone else is like, hey, they don't belong there. But this year has been kind of nice where we see that the, you know, with all respect to the Indians and their 22-game win streak, the Dodgers and the Astros were the two best teams at the beginning of the season and at the end of the season. So it's exciting to see good talent and good fortune rewarded here with the World Series.
Yeah, and as much as you need a huge, huge sample size to really figure out what talent grouping is the actual best in baseball, the numbers, the peripheral numbers for both the Astros and the Dodgers both suggested that they were better than everyone else. The Astros blew everyone out of the water in our favorite offensive stat, WRC+.
Yep.
They put up a 122, and the Dodgers were among the best in the league in terms of some very deep peripherals like fly ball percentage, which tends to be an indicator of your likelihood for extra base hits. And they were also very good in their pitching independent stats.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those you can even go through and look at just, you know, some of the people they had on the team and say, you know, when you're able to throw out Rich Hill, Kershaw, Alex Wood at the beginning of the season, even though he's cooled off, and then be able to finish up with Kenley Jansen. These are two teams that had some of the best players in the league, playing some of the best baseball in the league, and I don't think it's really any surprise to anybody who had followed more than five games that these two teams would meet here.
Well, speaking of these two teams meeting here, what do you say we run through our quick breakdown as we've been doing in the entire Smelly series for the playoffs? That was a terrible joke, but I'm going to leave it in. Anyway, breakdowns, Josh. Let's talk about starting pitching. Most interesting matchup among individuals for me in this World Series is Clayton Kershaw versus Justin Verlander.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The Ringer had an article today pointing out the fact that Justin Verlander and Clayton Kershaw are kind of tied together in terms of their greatness, because it was the one Clayton Kershaw succeeding the other, Justin Verlander, for the throne of best pitcher in baseball way back when Clayton Kershaw rose up out of wherever he comes from to dominate the baseball. Josh, talk to me about starting pitching matchups. I actually like Verlander better in this head-to-head.
Well, just looking at what Verlander's done over these, you know, past couple series, he came in for the one relief appearance and gave up a couple runs, got bailed out by his offense. But besides that, I mean, he's been pretty dominant. I mean, if you look at some of the numbers that he's put up, let me see here. He's got a 0.56 ERA through 16 innings. He's got a 0.75 whip. He's got 21 strikeouts. And the thing is, if you watched him pitch, he's locked in a sense where there were a couple times in his last outing where he went 3-0 count and was throwing off speed. I think there was one time where he went 3-2 count. It might have been to D.D. Gregorius. Don't quote me on that exactly, but I mean, he went 3-2 count and threw him a curveball, and D.D. had no chance. Like, he just had no chance. And that's just kind of a sign of a dude who's just feeling it. If he's able to throw, you know, all of his pitches and any count and feel comfortable about it, that's a really good indication of, like, hey, look, like, this guy's on. You mentioned it before. I mean, Verlander's had success in the past in the postseason. He's a dude who, it sounds silly, but he's done pretty well in the big moments when his team has needed him. Kershaw is a dude who I think has done pretty well this year. He's gotten a lot of run support, which is nice, because that's the big thing about him. It wasn't necessarily that he hadn't pitched very well in the past. It was the fact that he hadn't had any run support. I mean, he lost a couple of his games 2-1 or 2-0, and just really suffered because, you know, he was forced to have to go extra innings that his offense placed on him. So, it's tough to pull out because, like you said, these are two pitchers who at one point everyone considered the best pitcher on the face of the planet. I would lean towards Kershaw because he's a little bit closer to his prime, but by all means, I mean, the way that Verlander's been throwing, there's no reason to not think that he could keep doing it.
So just beyond Kershaw and Verlander, in the regular season, I'd give the Dodgers the lead, but with the World Series up, with the ability to rest some guys, and not have to worry about it because these are all the only games left, the only games that matter. I'm kind of feeling the Astros. I think their big names have pitched a little bit better. Keuchel's been good. He's thrown a lot of pitches. My instincts are telling me no, but my mind is telling me I think the Astros might have an advantage in the starting pitching department.
I think so, too, which is kind of funny. I think we all thought of pitching as just basically being a strength of the Dodgers all year long. But, yeah, once you get past the two aces at the top, when you look at what Keuchel, McCullers, and even Morton were able to do. Maybe not Morton. But what Keuchel and McCullers were able to do over the series, I think gives you a little bit more confidence. Yu Darvish has been pretty good. Rich Hill has also been pretty good, although he was in a situation where he had a billion runs put up behind him. He was pretty comfortable. So, you know, kind of looking, if you want to look in the margins, Charlie Morton has been a little bit better than Alex Wood was. But I think if you're kind of looking at beyond just what these two did in the last series, if you look at kind of how the season shook out for them, I would agree with you. I would actually tip the scale towards the Astros as having the advantage on the mound.
Yeah, which is odd to say, because the majority of the big names do lie with the Dodgers. Rich Hill, everybody loves to talk about Rich Hill, or at least baseball people love to talk about Rich Hill. Yu Darvish is there. Clayton Kershaw's there. You know, Ryu, Wood. In the other pitching department, relief pitching, the best relief pitcher in this series is, once again, Kenley Jansen, but getting to Kenley Jansen getting to the end of the game, you're swinging, if you will, from your starters to your relief pitchers, might go the way of the Astros in my book.
Yeah, I think when we talked about the Dodgers versus the Cubs matchup, we mentioned how, yeah, there's a bit of a gap for the Dodgers. Obviously, there's no real transactions made in the place in the playoffs, so it's still a present there. But there is something to be said that Brandon Morrow was able to go out there and throw 4 2/3 inning shutout innings. One hit, no runs, had 7 strikeouts, was basically untouchable and provided a nice bridge for them going forward. Now, of course, the Cubs bats in that series were pretty bad. The Astros, we'll talk about this in a little bit, but the Astros at home were pretty good, on the road pretty bad, but at home pretty good. It might be a little bit different level of competition, but at the same time, this is the playoffs. You're facing the best of the best, so Brandon Morrow was able to mow down that lineup. I think he should be a serviceable piece for the Dodgers, but when you compare kind of the depth that's there, the fact that the Astros can look at Ken Giles, a Chris Stavinsky, even a Joe Musgrove, or I hesitate to say Brad Peacock. He's been pretty good all year. I don't want to bail on him after 2.1, 2 1/3 shitty innings, but
they were shitty.
They were pretty bad. But, I mean, that's a quality arm. They just have more of a talent back there. They even have a matchup guy in Francisco Liriano if they need to bring him out there. Luke Gregerson was able to do his job when he was called upon. So, yep, I think this is another thing where both starting and relieving, the Astros can kind of lean on their pitching as their advantage right now.
So I've got 2 spots for the Astros. Did you split it or did you go with the Astros twice as well?
No, I went Astros twice as well. I mean, it's going to be one of those things. I think it's within the margin of error, but right now looking at it, yeah, I'm going with the Astros for pitching.
So here's where it gets interesting to me in the lineup. The Dodgers have been beating the crap out of everybody in the playoffs.
Yep.
They beat the crap out of everybody in the regular season. The Astros were statistically a significantly better offensive team than the Dodgers. But they've gone about as hot and cold as you can get in the playoffs, which makes them kind of hard to predict. They're a free-swinging team who doesn't strike out a lot, which is weird. That kind of screams
bat ball contact skills. That's a bunch of guys who are able to just kind of put it in play. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily a team that, you know, focuses on cutting down their swings when they have 2 strikes or anything like that, but you can see kind of with some of the young talent, like Jose Altuve is a dude who has great bat-to-ball skills. Carlos Correa is somebody who, you know, has a chance to make contact. I mean, this isn't necessarily a lineup of guys who are big hulking guys who can't run stuff out and are just trying to hit as far as possible. I mean, this is a lineup of these
Aaron Judge. Excuse me. I coughed.
This is the exact opposite of where you have a lineup of a lot of, I don't want to say smaller, but a lot of thinner, faster guys, kind of your prototypical just like athletes, who have learned how to develop a swing that maximizes their power potential.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we mentioned them. It's weird that they don't strike out a lot and they swing so often. Their swing percentage is very high for a team, and they still hit home runs. That's not a combination that exists.
It's why they were like lapping the league in WRC just offensive production this year.
So I'm going to say this is another area where the Astros have an advantage. The Astros have the better offense, but only by a slight hair. With Corey Seager back, the Dodgers can mash. They've got, we've talked about the young guys ad nauseum with Seager and Bellinger, Puig, and they've gotten explosions from Chris Taylor and
Kike Hernandez.
And Kike Hernandez, of course. How could I forget about Kike? And from our man Yasiel Puig. So I'm going to give the Astros the advantage here by a hair. Josh, how do you feel about lineups?
So I am actually going to lean the other way. I'm going to go with the Dodgers having the advantage here. The couple numbers I'm going to throw out to you. I'm going to give you four numbers. I want you to tell me which one was the Dodgers OPS for the championship series. I got 565, 621, I got 491, and then 881. Who you got?
Give me the last one there, Alex.
That is correct. D for Dodgers. That is the correct answer. The interesting thing about that is, while that talks a lot about how the Dodgers basically were able to mash their way here, I mean, they also obliterated the Diamondbacks on the way up here, posting an 858 OPS in that series over three games. But that's a lineup that has basically had no holes, has been batting, you know, well above what's been average for the postseason this year, in which we see pitching seeming to dominate. But I think what's more interesting is that the Astros, who were a prolific offense during the season, have looked a lot more shaky over their first two series. And the noticeable thing about it is the hard split that they had in the home and away games. So the Astros have been fantastic when they're at home. They've been out here scoring runs in bunches. Against the Red Sox, they were able to post eight runs twice. And then against the New York Yankees, I mean, they were able to come out and post a couple two-run games, but then also finish off with seven runs or four runs in the final two games. So this is a team that's been great at home. This is also a team that's been horrific on the road. In fact, the Astros finished with a 187 batting average for the entire ALCS, led with some of the performances of Evan Gattis going 1 for 10, of course, with one home run. Carlos Beltran going 1 for 12. Who else do we have? Josh Reddick, I think, led the way at 1 for 25, a .040 batting average. And yet this team still found a way to win. That's kind of a testament more to their pitching than their hitting. But yeah, looking at the Dodgers, you know, as you mentioned, they've gotten production from basically everywhere in the lineup. I mean, we're talking about, you know, Justin Turner hit a game-winning home run for them, but they also had Kike Hernandez come out and be able to hit three home runs in a game and just lead that team into the World Series. Yasiel Puig has been the X factor, as always. And, you know, other people like Chris Taylor, Andre Ethier, who I think I always forget is still playing baseball. They've had a ton of guys basically be able to come out and contribute. So I'm going to sit here and actually go with the recency bias and say, you know what? I think the Dodgers lineup is a little bit better.
You mentioned the home road splits for the Astros, Josh. I've got another weird little X factor for you that I think is worth discussing. The Dodgers have given up 19 runs so far in eight games this postseason. It's not bad. 18 of those 19 runs have come by way of the home run. And Josh, the Astros can hit some home runs. Jose Altuve has five in the playoffs. Carlos Correa has three. Evan Gattis and George Springer each hit a home run. And Alex Bregman, although he's having a pretty dreadful offensive playoffs as a whole, really tagged up Chris Sale twice. And I'm going to say the Dodgers, like I said, they've given up some home runs, six alone from Clayton Kershaw in 17 innings in the playoffs. Three for Alex Wood, two for Yu Darvish, two for Rich Hill, one for Brandon Morrow. Josh, are the Dodgers going to get dinged up and donged out? Jesus.
So, I don't think anyone wants that to happen to them. Let me see here. So, I think while that's a trend, I think there's kind of an important factor to kind of fit in there. So, the Astros are a home run hitting team, as we said. I mean, they swing a lot. They have power. But they also had the benefit of playing at the Red Sox and at the Yankees. And while they hit terribly in those two games, those are two very offensive-friendly environments. They themselves actually play in a non-offensive, kind of more neutral environment. You can pull it down the lines and be able to get something, but it's pretty deep towards the power alleys and center field. But the other half of this series, you know, if it goes all seven, it's going to be played in Los Angeles. And as we know, that's a very, very, very pitcher-friendly environment. You have to really kind of try and wrap one around the poles, or you really have to get a hold of one to hit it out there. So I think if you're the Dodgers, you're not necessarily too worried about it. They just finished playing against the Cubs, who had, you know, friendly confines, smaller park, and against the Diamondbacks, who play at some altitude. So I think this is actually going to be a little bit of a home run suppressed series, just given the environments that we're going to be playing in and the starting pitching that we're going to be facing. So I think that is a little bit of a red herring in terms of worrying about the Dodgers run prevention.
Right, before we get to picks, there's one last X factor that we would be remiss if we didn't discuss. Josh, Yasiel Puig is the most entertaining player in baseball right now, isn't he?
Well, he's the X factor, and I love it. I love the idea of him being good because I love Twitter, and I love salty people on Twitter. It gets me through the day. I find it to be more of a nourishment and energizer for me than food itself. And no one does a better job
generating
Twitter
content.
Other than Yasiel Puig, while he's good at baseball.
He's not always good at baseball. So Yasiel Puig has played great in the playoffs. Yasiel Puig, I need to look at his stats real quick. I'll edit this part out. Yasiel Puig is slashing .414, .514, .655. That slugging percentage isn't super impressive, but getting on base half the time in the playoffs is. He is 12 for 29. He's got a home run. He's got two doubles. And he's probably got 10 bat flips already. He's only struck out three times in 29 at-bats, which I think is very important.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been the key with the Yasiel Puig, right? Like, he was kind of the you know, all or nothing guy. I mean, he's a dude who had speed, but if he couldn't get on base enough, it just didn't work. I mean, you got to remember, this is also a guy that was sent down last year. Was it last year? I think it was last year. Was sent down last year for, you know, just not performing at the plate, and his defense wasn't even enough to save him and his job. So it's kind of nice to see him basically be able to work on the wild horse talent that everyone had come
to expect.
And
now he's up here in the playoffs. He's flipping bats. He's messing with Chase Utley on camera, making sick catches and brilliant throws and just all-around weird plays. He's getting caught stealing at second at times that don't really matter.
His tongue has been out of his mouth more than it's been in it. I think I need multiple hands and feet to count the number of hip thrusts I've seen him do after big hits in the last couple series.
I think for a lot of our listeners, people who aren't super familiar with Yasiel Puig, Josh, it can be hard to understand whether or not he's playing well or playing poorly, can it?
Yes, I believe that's why we decided that it was important, and quite honestly, a service to the baseball field for us to come up with the Yasiel Puig.
This is kind of like
index.
A visual aid, if you will. So with Puig, the numbers don't necessarily matter in terms of how much Puig you're getting. You need to, it's a more visceral experience than that. And we're normally numbers guys, but we appreciate, you know, the romance of baseball, you know, the physical poetry in motion, if you will. So, we came up with a Puig index for you listeners. If you see this following events, you'll be able to match it with what Puig you're seeing. And we'll tell you what you should be expecting from that Puig. So, Josh, base Puig. Base Puig is probably our lowest level of Puig. It's the worst Puig gets, which is still pretty exciting, but it's not always that great. Josh, for base Puig, I figured if he records a fart slam and a toot blan in the same inning. For those of you who don't follow along, a toot blan is a base running error. It stands for thrown out on the bases like a nincompoop. And a fart slam is fielder allows runner to score like a moron. Those are two made-up stats from the baseball internet. I think they're both credited to Reddit, but I'm not going to say that specifically because I'm not entirely sure about it. But it's something like, you know, you see Yasiel Puig get a single hit in front of him and he bounces behind him because he was goofing off. Or even better, there's like a short pop fly and he just didn't run all the way and lets it drop and a runner scores from third on what should have been an easy out. And then in the bottom half of the inning, he gets on base with a walk and then gets caught 30 feet off base on a pickoff attempt. If that happens in the same inning, you're watching base Puig. Josh, if we're at base Puig, what should we be looking out for?
If we're watching base Puig, I think what you should expect to see is a stat line of basically four at-bats, three strikeouts, one caught stealing, and maybe an outfield assist where he decides to go out and boot the ball, won't give me credit to the error because he didn't actually touch it, but has the arm to be able to get the guy out. Basically means that he was involved in a lot of scoring plays, and that does not mean it was all
right,
Dodgers.
If you're
plays.
Seeing base Puig, like the Dodgers are probably going to lose, right?
he's not making it easier.
So step up from base Puig, we get Puig Plus. Puig Plus is a little bit better. Puig Plus is at least in terms of value added for you stats nerds. is at least a replacement-level major league player. But he's still going to do some goofy shit. Puig Plus, you're seeing Puig Plus, if you see Yasiel Puig make hard contact and watch the ball off the bat, only for it to hit the warning track and bounce off the wall, leaving him stuck on first base with a 290-something-foot single.
Yeah, Puig Plus, I believe, is the guy who gets a terrible, terrible, terrible jump on a ball off the bat and then is able to make it up by making an unnecessary sliding or diving play to record what would otherwise be a pretty routine out.
Yep. So, Josh, if we're looking at Puig Plus, I'd expect him to what? Be like a, for just the series, 225, 285 with some decent extra base hits? Right, he's not going to win the World Series by himself, but he's not going to cost him a game.
Yep. I mean, that's where, you know, he ends up actually being as little Puig as possible. I mean, he's basically able to kind of just look at himself as a normal baseball player who helped a little bit, hurt a little bit. That's just not what we expect from Puig. But if we go one more step up, what do we have?
We have regular Yasiel Puig. This is the guy we see every day. This is the guy who's bat-flipping foul balls. This is the guy who's bat-flipping strikeouts, quite frankly. This is the guy who's making a sliding catch on a routine fly ball to right field and throwing out the guy tacking up at second to try to advance to third. It's your standard Yasiel Puig. He's going to play well in the series. If we get this Puig, he's going to be batting around 290 with some good power and some good on base. Maybe get a couple stolen bases, maybe not. Get an outfield assist here or there. But it's basically going to be your standard Yasiel Puig.
Yeah, I mean, when you get this level of Yasiel Puig, this is where you get to see all the tools that basically every scout would drool over and want to have. And then you also get to see exactly why. Oh, guess what? This is why he's not exactly a superstar. It's because there's a little bit of holes in those game in his game that need to be fixed. This is a dude who's probably going to go up there, get 25 at-bats, might even be able to leave with 8 hits, but might also leave with 8 strikeouts. Could totally see him kind of going, you know, let's say maybe, you know, 2 stolen bases, 1 caught stealing in a series. And we never know when those might happen. So, regular standard Yasiel Puig is an exciting player who definitely, bolsters his team a little bit, but is liable to kind of step out at any moment and make a bonehead play that could be very costly.
And then a step up from regular Yasiel Puig is Super Puig. This is when you see all of the talent and the insanity matching together. This is when you see him doing something crazy, like if there's a hard-hit line drive that bounces in front of him and he lets it go between his legs into the corner in right field, allowing what would be a normal, like, easy single to advance to a double. And then he uses his cannon of an arm to throw that guy out trying to stretch it to third from a single into a triple from the warning track. It's Super Puig. He'll tank home runs. He'll hit triples. He'll steal bases. He'll do all kinds of crazy shit. Definitely going to strike out. But it might be the most entertaining level of Puig.
See, I was going to say Super Puig is when you see him actually able to recognize the curveball low and away, lay off of it, and then be able to turn on the heater inside and give us a nice, beautiful dance and a tongue wag as he's going down the line. Super Puig is, I think, what we would say he was when he first got to the league and was, you know, lighting it up every night and starting this whole Puig mania to begin with anyway. Just a really exciting player who kind of puts it all together. Is playing pretty fearlessly and, you know, in my opinion, is playing actual baseball instead of the white way to play. He's, you know, letting the Cuban side flare a little bit and having a grand old time out there.
Right. Super Puig will likely be in the conversation for World Series MVP if his team wins. This is a guy who's – we've been seeing Super Puig throughout the play – throughout the playoffs, guy who's getting on base, getting a lot of hits, really wreaking havoc on the base paths, and is in the highlight reels every night. But Josh, there is one more level of Puig.
That is right, and it is peak Puig. It is quintessential Puig. It is everything that you love and worship and adore about him.
We've only seen it in flashes
at its maximum
career.
Only a little
bit. I think he could sustain it. And I will say, if he hits peak Puig, the Astros have no chance. If he can sustain a level of peak Puig, then he's going to win the World Series MVP. It's a mortal lock. The Dodgers are going to win in a sweep. It's a mortal lock because he just can't be stopped. Peak Puig, you'll know you see peak Puig when he gets up to the plate, swings at 4 pitches in a row. The first 3 are pulled hard foul balls, definite foul balls that he bat flips stepping out of the box. And then the 4th pitch is a home run that is easily out, but he wasn't sure about it, so he ran it out anyway. Peak Puig is when you see him rob a home run and then make the throw to third, even though there's nobody on base.
Yeah, peak Puig is a let's go with God's gift to baseball. It's where it's just fun. Like, everything that is good and lovely about the game is on full display as he basically just leads the charge and the Dodgers to the World Series victory. I hope we get to see peak Puig. I hope we get to see these backflips, and I hope we get to see the tongue wag and the hip gyrations. And I hope we basically get to watch a man offend all of America as he goes on to prove that he was the best player for a four-game series.
I really hope so too, because Yasuo Puig is like my one rooting interest left in this series. So Josh, it's that time of the pod predictions. I predicted that the Astros had... Well, first of all, let's do a recap of what our scores are so far. I got both wild card games right. And then promptly got both division series... All four division series wrong. And I got... I technically got the ALCS right. And the NLCS, right? But at this point, who's counting? I am, I'll call it four and four, but it's a feels like a really unjustified 4-4. That it's, I got some gift wins there.
Well, don't worry, I'm not that much, not that different from you. I managed to go 1-1 in the wild card game. Basically, expecting the Yankees win, Rockies let me down, though you had a good season, don't feel bad. I suffered the, Washington Nationals lost in the division series. That's on me. I should have known that was going to happen. And I was actually surprised by the Yankees, and their run to beat and knock out the Cleveland Indians. But otherwise, I was able to pick up on the Houston Astros and the Dodgers winning. And I actually was able to predict, both teams of the World Series. So it's a pretty cool feeling. Now I have to kind of put the cherry on top to see if I can pick the winner.
And in our matchups, I said that the Astros probably had an advantage or slight advantage in every single category we listed, and you were split.
Yeah, I was. I think it's going to be basically one of those where, you know, if one side of the ball or, you know, one facet of the game, if you will, decides to overpower the other, that's the one who's going to win. So if you see the pitching kind of take off and dominate the hitters, I think you're going to look at an Astros victory. If you look at the hitters and they're just mashing the ball as they had the entire year, I think you're going to look at the Dodgers walking away with a World Series.
So prediction time. Josh, I'm going to go against everything I just said, and I'm going to say the Dodgers win the World Series. And here's my logic for it. Baseball is pretty random as a sport. For all the numbers and for all the math-driven probability we can come up with, it tends to be pretty random as a sport. So I look at the Astros and say they're more likely to win because they have better talent, because they have better peripherals on their WRC+, because their recent pitching has been better. Oh, that matters. I'm going to go with the least random thing in baseball in 2017, and that is the Dodgers winning. They've been consistent about it, minus one bad stretch.
Right.
I think the Dodgers are the most dominant team in the league this year, just because they have been. I'm going to go jump on your recency bias train, and I'm going to take the Dodgers. I'm going to take the Dodgers in seven. And I'm going to take a Puig MVP. I think we see Super Puig with a couple Puig flashes.
Oh, man. Let's see here. Well, the good news is we're either both right or both wrong. I'm also going to go with the Dodgers. I think that basically the margins between the two teams are it's pretty hard to choose from. I mean, there's not really a clear-cut decided advantage in this series either way. You know, since we're in this podcasting business and you guys want me to make a choice, I am going to go with the Dodgers simply because the they've just been consistent. They've been kind of mashing all different types of pitchers thrown at them, all different types of looks. They're getting contributions up and down the lineup. Whereas we've seen that the Astros, for whatever reason, when they leave Minute Maid Park, when they leave Houston, seem to suffer offensively. And it seems like it shouldn't be the case. But we don't know if there's any, you know, necessary reason why they're just not as prepared on the road. But it's been a few games now, and it's been two series. I think we're going to look at the Dodgers using Dodger Stadium and that cavernous outfield to kind of control and contain the Astros hitters. and pick up their first World Series since 1988.
All right, well, we'll see if it shakes out that way. Josh, it has been fun. We'll catch up here shortly. Until then, buddy.
Absolutely. Can't wait till the off season.